All right, welcome to class today. Glad to see so many of you with us. Let's do just a little bit of logistics, we'll throw some material, and then we'll move on with other things. So, as noted, we're going to try a dry run of how in-class quizzes might work. I've tried several different tool sets to make this go. And this one I think will work the best, but also has the most unknowns for me. So the thought here, we'll do this a little bit later on in the class, but the basic model we have here is in the regular quizzing site. I've added a new opportunity. There's a dry run quiz here. You'll notice it is limited to 20 minutes. The idea here is you will click on the link. It will show you the problems. You will have 20 minutes to write your answers on paper, take a picture, and upload. We will actually have some time in class later today for you to try this out. And we'll also talk about what happens if there are technical problems and you can't get in quite as soon as you want. But I want to put that near the end of class instead of near the beginning, because I want to make sure we get some other material, and I don't know exactly when all of that will end. So we will plan to end class material at about 5:30, and then give you some time to try that out. I will stay online and try to help any issues we have. And once that dry run is done on your end, after that, after the class is over at 10:30, then you're welcome to go on your way. I'll take sort of how that worked and possibly switch to another system. I am currently monitoring. I see 6 of you have already clicked that link. So surprise, you now have 20 minutes to do things in. But we'll sort of sort that out as we go along. So I'll talk some more about that near the end of class today. So there's that. I've also posted a lab for this Friday. It is, again, a lot of things, just sort of as a review. It's going to deal with sequences, products, and powers of sets. Okay. So various ways of measuring that. It also has this thing about a subsequence and actually defines what that is on it. Subsequence is something we haven't spent time on in class, but is in the reading, and I hope even this simple description and doing the practice will work. And then it's got a lot of proofs to deal with. Clearly, doing some inductive proofs and multiple fill-in-the-blank problems is quite a bit of time, so the real test will have a subset of this material. I'm likely including one proof and just a few fill-in-the-blank kind of questions. I may move the fill-in-the-blank questions to the online quiz instead. I'll sort of figure that out. But that is posted with some keys for your viewing if you want. Will the dry run quiz be graded? No. All I'm going to do is make sure that the infrastructure necessary to grade it will work. How would answering proofs work? Would you just have a large text box? No, what you should plan to do is have a sheet of paper, any old paper you want, blank or lined or however you want to do it, and you will write out your proof on that, take a picture with some device that can take a picture or a scan if you have a scanner, and then upload it to the site. So the plan is you'll still do this on paper. You won't need to print out any particular prompt. Any piece of paper will go because the way you upload it will associate it with the problem. What is the most ideal, fastest way to get a photo uploaded so we are not wasting quiz time? We'll talk more about this later, but I've tried to design the site so that the uploading process can actually extend a little bit beyond the end of the quiz. This is the general plan. We have a question, can we type our answers and take a picture of what we typed? Maybe a lot of these things are going to involve fractions and so forth, and so I really would prefer it to look like math. If you are able to enter proper formulas and so forth, great, but I would rather see a fraction written in sloppy handwriting than a typed version using slashes or something that is harder to understand. If that doesn't work, if you don't have access to a camera or in some fashion or the like, please email me and we'll come up with an alternative model. But the plan really is to write it out just as we would on the in-class quizzes. Other questions? Okay. The new material I want to cover today has to deal with combinations. We may get a little into permutations. We'll sort of mix these up together. But they're going to sort of continue some of the counting ideas we did last time. Last time we talked about summation notation and some basic proofs for them. Today we're going to give a few general rules about how to count a particular kind of thing. In particular, we're going to deal with how to count. We're going to start with sort of how to count power and product sets. As sort of an initial thing, and then we're going to talk about how to count options when we have several things we can deal with to sort of explain how these processes go. So let's start with just power and product sets. If I have a set with two members times a set with three members, then I am going to expect the magnitude, the number of elements in this set. I have a two element set and a three element set, and I'm multiplying them, the answer is going to be a six element set. So the product notation is useful in that it suggests how we combine cardinality. Just as a reminder and for reference to verify this is actually the case, let's try to enumerate all of those members. Remember that when we take a product set, we are taking sequences where the first entry of the sequence is on the left, the second entry of the sequence is on the right. And so our sequences here are these sequences and begin because sequences order does matter. I do have both 1, 2 and 2, 1. And so those are my set of values and there are six of them, okay? And so this general principle holds whatever our sets were, whether they're overlapping members or non-overlapping members, doesn't matter when we're doing product set, because we're going to have this behavior. That we're gonna just take a value from each side, put them together, and because order matters of our sequences, we're going to end up having a multiplication of the two set cardinalities as the resulting set cardinality. And so one way of, so let's just briefly do the product set and then we'll talk about how this relates to other things, okay? So if I have a product set, if I have the set 1^2 raised to the 4th power, well that is by definition, that is the same thing as the set 1^2 times the set 1^2 times the set 1^2 times the set 1^2. And we know how to deal with the cardinalities of multiplication. So if we take the cardinality of this, we can see that it's going to be 2 times 2 times 2 times 2, which is to say it is going to be 16. And so this therefore is going to be 2 raised to the 4th power equals 16. So the notation we use for product and power sets conveniently is the same notation we would use for dealing with the cardinalities of the resulting sets. So this gives us this ability to express cardinalities and compute cardinalities easily without trying to enumerate all of the entries of a set. We can just find the entries of each of the individual sets, apply the proper product and power rules for arithmetic, and end up with the final result. Questions about any of these pieces? I realize we only did sequences and product sets fairly briefly last week, and so there may be some general questions about that or things you'd like me to talk more about. Anything you'd like me to say more about these ideas before I move on to counting options? For the first example, it is 2^1 and 3^1. Yes, so it is the case that by definition, any set to the 1th power is the same thing as that set. And therefore, the magnitude of that set to the 1st power is the same thing as the magnitude of the set. And so we can think of this as being 2^1 times 2^2 to get 6. That is a fine way of thinking about it. It's unusual to think about that context unless we actually put the power up there, though. I should comment, this is not restricted to primes. That might be a reason we're thinking this. This also applies if I have a set of a non-prime number of values, okay? So if I were to take something like this, this is 4 elements in that, 1 element in that, the multiplication of that will be 4, and so the magnitude of this will be 4, right? It just, when we do, we just use the number of elements in these sets, and we do our multiplication in the ordinary way. Other questions? How would this be related to the clean star? Yeah. So remember the clean star, right? We said that the star is equal to A to the 0 union A to the 1 union A to the 2 union A to the 3 union forever. Okay. So what is the magnitude of this set? Well, the magnitude of A star is going to be the magnitude of A zero. And we have these union terms. Understanding exactly how union changes the cardinality depends on if they're overlapping elements. But since this has only 0 element sequences, and this has 1 element sequences, and this has 2 element sequences, there's going to be no overlap. And so we're going to end up adding these. Okay, so we have all the elements of A0 plus all the elements of A1 plus all of the elements of A2 plus and so on. So as long as A has at least one entry, right? So let's suppose, I don't know, let's just assume the magnitude of A was 2. That would be 1. 2 to the 0 is 1. 2 to the, so 2 to the 0 is 1. 2 to the 1 is 2, 2 to the 2 is 4, and so we end up with 1 plus 2 plus 4 plus 8 plus 16 plus forever. But because it goes on forever, that means the magnitude of A star is going to be infinite. And at some level, it doesn't matter how big each of those individual sets are, because I am making an infinite number of them added up, I'm going to end up with an infinite value. Other questions? Okay. So we have this ability to sort of count the members of sets and product sets and so forth. And that is going to be useful in counting the options that could exist in various circumstances. And to start thinking about options, let's just take an example option. I'm going to just sort of assert that there are several things we could say about you. We could say, for example, your mood. Your mood might be happy, and it might be sad, and it might be bored, and it might be angry. Maybe there's other moods, but let's suppose this is the set of moods you could have. And let's suppose you also have, I don't know, how about your alertness? Maybe you are asleep, maybe you are fully awake, maybe you are half asleep. And if we have these ideas of the sets of moods you could have and the sets of alertnesses you could have, then your overall state, you are going to be effectively, you're going to be an element at any given point in the time. You're going to be an element of mood times alert. You have a mood and you have an alertness. And so, for example, I am currently feeling, let's say I'm feeling kind of bored and fully awake. And so this might represent my current state inside this set. And this is an element of mood times alertness. I took one element of mood, one element of alertness, and put them together in a sequence. Okay? And so we could ask, so we might could call this idea here, this is sort of the state of us. What is it we know about us? And of course, if we really want to understand our state, we need more moods, more alertnesses, and more things we need to know about ourselves too. We could add how hungry we are and so forth. But let's start with this simple model for starters. Then we could ask the question, how many states can you have given this set? So if we say there are 4 moods you can have and 3 alertnesses you could have, and you always have a mood and an alertness, then this is really just asking the size of the mood times alertness state. Okay, we say that you are in the mood times alertness set. And so how many states you could have is the size of that set. And that is going to be 4 moods, 3 alertnesses. This is going to be 4 times 3, which is going to be 12. And so we can use this concept of counting product sets to count possible situations we could have. We just need to know how many options are available for each of the things that is going on. This comes to a general rule we're going to do in counting states. If your state is an element of A and an element of B, then we take the size of A times the size of B. Okay? And this comes directly from this idea of the product creates this sort of and behavior. We took one of one and one of the other. If instead it is an element of A or an element of B, then we're going to use A plus B. And the reason we're going to use a plus here is if I say you are either have an alertness or a mood, now I'm saying your element, if I were to sort of say you have only one of those, then the or version of you would be an element of mood union alert. Okay, you're going to be either a mood or an alert, but not both. This is sort of an exclusive or model. Okay, and so if I'm trying to pick between two things, then I need to add the number of options of those two things. Because when I take the union of a 4-element set and a 3-element set with no overlapping elements, I end up with a 7-element set. And so we have this general principle we can apply without ever dealing with sets directly. When we're trying to count the number of states that could exist, if you get to pick one or the other, you can add. If you get to pick one and the other, you can multiply to get how many options could exist. Let's look at some examples. How many 3-digit numbers are there? Okay, let's try to count the number of 3-digit numbers. Now you probably already know because you've dealt with numbers of digits along the way so far. But if we want to try to count the number of 3-digit numbers, well, we need to pick digit 1 and digit 2 and digit 3. And those ands means we're going to be multiplying because we need to pick a value for each of the 3 digits. And if we look at the last digit, this could be 0 or 1 or 2 or 3 and so on or 9. So I'm going to add up those options. I have 10 options. So I end up with 10 options for digit 3, the same 10 options for digit 2. But generally when we talk about a 3-digit number, I don't have the 0 option. So this is just going to be 1 or 2 or and so on or 9. So I only have 9 options there. And so I would expect the end result here, assuming I don't have a leading 0, to be 9 times 10 times 10 is 900 3-digit numbers that could exist. Hopefully this is not overly surprising. You may have thought it was 1,000 because you were counting the leading zeros and you could argue one way or the other. But this general principle of the ors and the ands, adding together all of the ors, multiplying all of the ands will end up giving us how this works. Okay, and so we can do this to count lots of different kinds of options. Okay, now sometimes this gets, so we have a question about, what about when the first and second digit are zero? So I have precluded zero from the first digit. If I didn't want to allow 003, then I just would have said there were 10 options for digit one instead of 9. So we have I have claimed this is not an element of the three digit numbers. If you think it is an element of the three digit numbers, that means you just put one more option for digit one and you'll say there's 1,000 of them instead of 900. And you could define it either way, just depends on how you define three-digit number. And it looks like there's been some conversation in the chat to support that. Other questions about this example? Okay. Now let's think about how many five-letter words are there. Let's just start here. Okay, and we'll make a slightly more advanced version of this later. Well, I know that for each of the words in English, I have 26 options. I'm going to use word here in a loose version. We're going to allow sequences of nothing but consonants and so forth. So I have 26 options for each of the spots. I have 5 spots. And so I would expect 26 to the 5th possible set. Okay. Now, clearly most of these are not words because this would suggest that, for example, I don't know, BPQQS is an element of words, of a 5-letter word. And clearly that is not a word. But if we take this more expansive view where we just mean it's made out of a string of the 26 letters, 5 long, we can do this power notation to sort of simplify what's going on. We've got 5 different or ands of 26 options. So 26 options for the first and 26 options for the second and 26 options for the third and 26 options for the fourth and 26 options for the fifth. And so we have this shortcut way of doing it. When it's the same number of options every time, we can just raise things to a power. But let's suppose we want a 5-letter word with no repeated digits, or repeated letters rather. So any letter that appears in it appears at most once. And so our example here of the BPQQS wouldn't work because there's 2 Qs. How can we count these? Well, this runs upon the idea that if I think about each of my letter slots, in principle, I could put 26 values in each of them, but I need to pick one of them first. Let's just suggest we pick this one first. We've got 26 options for that letter. Once I have picked a letter to go there, perhaps B, I only have 25 options for the next letter because I'm not allowed to repeat a letter. So I can pick any letter except B. Let's suppose I pick P. Now, because I can't repeat B or P, I've got 24 options for my next letter. Let's pick Q. Now, because I can't use B, P, or Q, I've only got 23 options for my next letter. So I can't use Q again. Let's pick R. Now, because I can't use B, P, Q, or R, I've got 22 options for my last one. And so the end result here is I have this 26 times 25 times 24 times 23 times 22 possible values. It's going to be less than that 26 to the fifth because I'm not multiplying 26 every time. I have one fewer option each time because I'm not repeating things. This idea of not repeating shows up very often when we're counting various kinds of things in programming and in the world at large. It is common to have a set of things where you can pick anything you want, but you can't pick the same thing twice. And so we want to have a cleaner way of writing this. There's a couple of ways we could do this. I could write this using product notation. I could say, for example, from x of 22 to 26, multiply x. And this could work. This is not the most common version that is used, however. In fact, it's very uncommon to see this notation being used for this. Instead, the most common way of writing this is 26 factorial divided by 21 factorial. It is likely that many of you look at this and say, that doesn't make any sense. Okay, let's remind ourselves that the factorial means the product of all numbers from this down to one. So this is defined as 26 times 25 times 24 times 23 times 22 times 21 times 20 times and so on down to times 2 times 1. This other one is defined as all the product of all numbers from 21 down. So I have 21 times 20 times 2 times 1. And by nature of how fractions cancel, the 21s cancel and the 20s cancel and so forth, and the 2s and the 1s cancel, leaving us with just the numerator of the value we want. And this has become the standard way of writing these, how many values are there if we don't repeat? We write, and part of the reason is because this has a nice clean way of writing it. This is 26 factorial divided by 26 minus 5 factorial. And so we see that 5 repetitions of 26 options, we can write this in this generic form that will just work. We could do this here, but we have this 22 instead of 21, which makes it a little bit trickier instead. And so while we could have picked either one, the one that has been picked as the way to write these repetitions without, these selections without repetition is by this fraction of factorials. So this is a tool that we'll use to start exploring how many things can there be? How many passwords can you have? How many different situations can you occur in different places? These will sort of handle various sorts of complexity measures of the search space, the possible values that could exist. Thoughts, comments, questions? Okay. And what I'd like to do now is transition, and we're just going to actually try out using the potential quizzing site. So if you could all go to the quiz page, and if you click on the dry run quiz, it will have some guidelines as to what's going on. It has two questions and two places to upload an image. Okay. Since we're all sort of looking, we have a question here. All right. I do have some questions. Let me go back to this. All right. How would you solve for little, like one letter, two letter, three letter, and five letter words total there are? Okay. That's a great question. Let's suppose the number of words where the size of the word is less than or equal to 5. That would be the number of one letter words plus the number of two letter words plus the number of three letter words plus the number of four letter words plus the number of five letter words. Okay. So we have this model. We also have a question, what would you do if some letters are repeated? So when I'm saying we have this, if every letter can be a repetition, it's 26 to the fifth. If we say there's no repeated letters, we say it's this 26 factorial over 26 minus 5 factorial. What if some were repeated? Well, we need to define what we mean by some. Okay. So if I were to say I have a five letter word, one repetition allowed. Okay, then we could do this same work. Well, clearly I can do 26 things in the first spot. In the second spot, what can I do? Well, I can do 26 because I can repeat that first letter. But if I do 26, if I get that one special one, I'm sort of in a different position. And so from here, we would then need to sort of think about, okay, if it was a repetition and if it was not a repetition, what do I do? And so we'd end up having multiple circumstances. We'll deal with some more of this on Monday. So we have this question, could I say I have a zero letter word? Sure. If I decide the empty string is a word, I could add in 26 to the zero, if I think that the empty string is a word. So this would be the empty string. Is that a word? Is that not a word? You can decide based on your definition. You can either add that in or not. Sometimes there are other ways I can deal with this. So if I said I have a five letter word with no direct repeats, I know double letters, let's say that. Then I have 26 in the first spot and 25 in the second spot because I have something here and something here. But in this next spot, I can't have a doubled letter, so I can't use P again, but I could use B, so I still have 25 options. And then this next spot, I can't use B again, but I could use any other letter, so I have 25 spots there. And in this next spot, I couldn't have Q again, but I could have any other letter, so I have 25 there. And so I'd end up with 26 times 25 to the fourth. So to count these, we need to sort of understand the rules, understand the limits of what's going on, and count up all of those things. Other questions? I should come back. The question about how we would do if you had something like one repetition allowed, we will come back to that on Monday and sort of explore how that works in more detail. Just don't want to spend the time right now. All right. Feel free to put more questions in there, but I'm going to move back to the quizzing site. So when you go into this quiz, it will start your timing. I've been here before, so it says my time is up. Sorry about that, but you can go in anyway, right? So the idea is you work on this, you draw your answers, and then you can upload. It does allow you to upload after your time is ended, but it does note the time you started and the time you uploaded. And if that looks like a whole lot of time has passed, then we're going to try to find out why. So you should stop working when the time is up and go ahead and upload your answer. Write your answer on a piece of paper, however you want to do that. Take an image and upload it, and we will see if this is working. So far, it looks like about a third of you that are listening have successfully done this. So if we could sort of all try that. And if you get that working, and it should show a little preview of your image after you do that, if your images are up there and everything seems to be fine, you're welcome to leave class. If you have any questions or concerns, I will stay on the call until 10:50 or until everybody has left the call. The question, should each question be done on a different page? I don't actually care if they're on different papers or not, but I would like your image to sort of contain the answer. Right, we're going to have humans looking at your scans and grading things. I'd prefer them not to have to search for your answer. But if you want to put them all on the same page and just take pictures of different parts of the page, that would be an absolutely fine thing to do. Can we do it in Microsoft Paint? Maybe. I would really like to be able to read what you did. My preference would be that you would do it on a piece of paper, but if that isn't working for you, anything that is readable and works correctly, we'll be fine. Do we have to write out the question? No. Because you were uploading in the question itself, I know what the question was. The answer alone is sufficient. All right, we now have half of you having successfully done this. So we take a picture and upload it for each question. Yes, that is the plan. I suppose you could take one picture and crop it in an image editor. I think you'd find that more time. I might be wrong, but I would like a different image for each question. The plan is that we will have one or two such images per quiz, just like we had one or two sides of paper in the quizzes we've been doing in class in the past. You just have the number of the question next to the answer to that question. So currently, I might disable this, but currently the order of the questions is randomized for each student. I can probably disable that. I haven't disabled it yet. So question number would not be what I would want by preference. I probably should just disable that ordering for these upload quizzes. And I think I can do that, but I haven't done it yet. My picture is tilted sideways when you upload it. Is that okay? Yeah, I don't think that's a problem. It'll be slightly annoying for the TAs, but I think we can add the way to handling that on our end. Is there any preferred file type for the picture? I would prefer it to be an image file, so JPEG, PNG, etc. And I'd prefer it not to be gargantuan, although you should be able to upload fairly large images. But what sort of whatever is most natural will work. I would rather it not be a document format, I'd rather it be an image format. But beyond that, don't care a great deal. Is the fastest way just to take a picture with your phone, email the picture yourself, download it onto your computer, and then upload it? Or is there some faster way to do that? I believe, depends a little bit on your phone's operating system, but you should be able to go to the quizzing site on your phone and upload from your phone. If your phone doesn't readily allow that, then that might be the simplest way. And again, we are allowing a little bit of extra time to get the upload after the quiz time is ended. There's a comments here. So there's a whole lot of other options here. People are suggesting you can use your computer's camera. There's, if you're using Mac, you've got AirDrop. Google has its Photos Cloud Backup, which seems to be options here that people are looking at. That'll all, of course, depend on what your photo is on, right? So the device that is creating the photo will have different ways of accessing that photo file. And so whatever your way is, sort of play around with it. My plan is, although this demo will sort of close in time, it will allow you to keep uploading files. So I would encourage you, if you weren't very satisfied with how you did this today, to sort of keep playing around here in this demo assignment and find a flow that works comfortably for you. And if none of your flows work comfortably for you and you continue having problems, by all means email me and we'll try to find an alternate solution for you. Is there a way to delete a photo if you upload the wrong one? If you re-upload to the same box, it should just replace the old file. If you upload the file, will it auto-save? So you have to click the Upload Selected File button. Browsers don't allow me to have file submission happen without user action as a way of trying to prevent some kinds of spyware and so on. So you will need to physically click the Upload Selected File. After you do that, it should revisit the page and show you a preview of the file we received. So you should see, right below that, you should see a little image of the file, a miniaturized version, so you can see what got uploaded. But it won't autosave unless you click the upload button. I should also comment, each upload button will happen independently. So if you have two questions, you want to upload one image and then upload the other, rather than browsing for both and clicking upload all at once. It won't be shaded green if it's answered, because the shaded green means there's been an asynchronous background update and we're not doing background updates. Instead, when you press the button, it'll re-go to the page and it will be shaded white with the preview there. How can we confirm we've gone through all the questions in the quiz? So if you've uploaded for each of the items, you should see a preview of each of your uploaded images beneath the upload option. And so that preview beneath the upload option should show you that you have successfully uploaded for each of them. And if you've uploaded for each of them, then that's all there is, right? The questions are sort of uploaded separately, and in that sense, sort of somewhat handled separately rather than a general submission for the whole quiz. We're looking pretty good. We now have 207 uploaded images. Given there are 113 people in the class, that still does mean we've got 10 to 15 people that haven't had success there. Yeah. Do we leave once the quiz is done? Absolutely. This is going to be the end of lecture today, is making sure things work. So if you feel comfortable that you could do this when we do an actual quiz, then you're good to go. Okay, so we have an error message. Thank you for sharing the actual error text. I will go look into why this happened. So if you see a preview of your file, then everything worked. I may have been overly I've been working harder than I should have to find all to give you extra error messages. If you see an error message but your image does show up, then you're good to go. If you see an error message and your image doesn't load, or you don't see an error message and your image doesn't load, what I'd like you to do is just sort of email me with an attachment of your image and describe why the upload failed, so that I have a trace of what happened and can try both try to fix the upload and get your scan. But if you see a preview, then the upload actually did work, and I will try to figure out why that particular error message may occasionally occur when things did work. So we have an off-topic question, but an interesting question. Why is mastering everything but logic a C+? So when I was designing the grading for this class, I went to the classes that depend upon this class. And I asked them, what do you need and how much do you need it? How bad is it if students are failing on something? And the consensus was that if you don't understand how to write out and understand this quantified logic portion of discrete math, then we have fairly strong evidence you fail subsequent classes. And so I tried to match the idea that you should be cautious moving on if you haven't mastered that to this idea in the grading scale. Not sure I did perfectly, but that was how I picked this, and that's why logic sort of has a special place there. So my image set it uploaded but has a default picture, not the actual mini picture. That is unexpected from my end. That suggests the upload did not, in fact, work. And so that would be an example where you would, in the real case, you would email me. And I wonder why it did it. It said it uploaded, it has a default picture. Huh. I don't know that case. Maybe try again if it still doesn't work. If you could email me the picture you tried to upload, and I'll try to debug it. And also, if that happens in the real quiz, emailing me and saying it wouldn't upload is the appropriate action to take. Okay, we have a question. I'm concerned over the uploading part. I'm not sure what concerned means. Do you mean you can't upload, or you're worried it's taking too much time, or I don't know how to answer the concern in the abstract. So the comment, it took about 5 to 10 minutes to do the uploading. So this is, right, this allow, you are allowed to upload after the quiz time is expired. And if your upload is 5 to 10 minutes late, 15 minutes late, you're fine. Okay. Oh, interesting. Yeah, so that probably just means that your browser has trouble. So there's a comment that JPEG worked when the HEIC didn't. That probably does mean that we actually received the file, but that your browser doesn't know how to display the HEIC file format, which is why the preview didn't work. Sorry, same problem as which? Same problem as the previous comment about the HEIC and JPEG or the 10 minute? Okay, yes. So that again is just your browser isn't displaying the file format that was uploaded. That won't stop us from grading it. It'll just stop you from seeing the preview. Switching to JPEG or PNG file formats that are supported by all browsers will allow you to see the preview and make things run a little bit smoother. I will look into having the server convert file formats upload in the wrong form, but I'm not 100% certain that I can do that. So there's a comment here. If you press the upload button but don't choose a file, it says that you didn't send file data. That feels like approximately the right error message. Your browser said it uploaded a file, but there wasn't a file. If that doesn't feel like the right error message to you, I'm happy to accept suggestions about what it should say instead. Will there be further logic content, or is there only the final at this point? So I actually, even our last in-class quiz had logic questions, and my plan is to put a couple of logic questions on many of the coming quizzes, like we had on quiz 7, where the first question was translate something into logic. That one turned out to be a bit trickier than some we've done in the past. We'll also have some easier ones. And then we'll also have the last quiz and the final quiz as opportunities to replace things. So I do expect to have additional logic questions, both in-class and online, along the way, and then there will also be the opportunity to replace points later on. So I'm now showing that everybody that has visited the site has successfully uploaded at least one image. That's good. Do you have to remember what topics you didn't do well on for the final quiz? No, you don't need to remember. It's available for you. So if you go to the progress page and you scroll down to your cumulative performance and go to your view full grade computation, it will show you exactly how you are doing on each of the four topics. You'll see I am doing very, very poorly. So because I have submitted practically nothing, right? But it'll show you your actual percentage score and your overall status with each of the four topics, and then also gives the same breakdown that was given in the policies. I'm not sure exactly what is meant by which topic correlates to which. I had toyed with showing you the exhaustive list of all rubric items and what they're going to, but it is literally every single rubric item is allocated to these four topics, sometimes to several. So that'd be several hundred entries. Didn't seem immediately valuable. Hopefully many of the things will have a fairly intuitive connection. If there's a follow-on you want to ask about that, feel free. If you take a topic on the final quiz, if you do worse, will it still replace whatever you had? That is currently the plan, is that if by the end, I want to know what you know at the end of the course. If you showed me earlier, great. If you show me at the end, that's fine as well. I should also comment, last semester we had zero cases of that. So nobody did worse on the final than they had done along the way. And I don't have any immediate expectation that will change. If you are a case where it would look like it would go down, I'd probably reach out to you individually to try to figure out why, so that we could give the appropriate behavior. So while I'm not guaranteeing that I will only improve, I'm also not going to just sort of arbitrarily penalize you without explaining why. This is particularly important because the final, in order to be quickly graded, is just given an insufficient, competent, or master grade. There's no actual feedback given on the final. And so if it looks like that would make your grade go down, I would reach out and so that we could have that conversation. All right. Our time has elapsed. And so in a minute here, I'm going to need to change my setup to go over to my office hours, which I believe are next on my calendar today. Thank you all. It looks like this seems to be working in general. If you have other concerns or issues, feel free to email me or drop by office hours and we'll see to sort things out. And again, I'll remind you, you're welcome to keep trying different upload strategies to find one that you feel works more smoothly on the quiz before we get to the final one. And with that, I will end class. Thank you all for your time.